This is Mr. Dungan.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you.
In terms of the time, I've spoken with Ms. Kodick. I believe I'll be speaking first, and then any remaining time that I have, I will defer to Ms. Kodick.
Okay, so she just gets the remaining of 10 minutes.
I believe so, yes.
She gets what she gets? Okay.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is George Dungan from the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. I represent Sandrino T. At issue in this case, Your Honors, is whether or not the juvenile court erred in transferring Sandrino's case to adult court. Within that issue, there are three particular subsets of issues. First of all, whether or not this transfer order to the separate Lancaster County Court is in fact a final appealable order. If it is, what standard of review should be used by the court? And then third, whether or not there was sufficient evidence to in fact transfer this. Now, speaking specifically to the first issue, whether or not this is in fact a final appealable order, I know the court's already heard from this a couple of times in In Re Dale L. as well as In Re Tyrone K. The arguments made in those arguments by my office are similar to those in my brief, so I would submit it mostly on those. However, I do have at least one additional practical concern that I think is incredibly important to bring up regarding whether or not this is in fact a final appealable order.
What did we do in In Re Dale L?
What was the decision in In Re Dale L?
Yes.
I believe the decision was by a split court. There were only six justices at that time. And in looking at the opinion, there was not any real opinion beyond just upholding what had happened, given that that split decision went to the decision of the juvenile.
To not transfer or transfer?
It was transferred at that point in time.
So that decision provided no precedent whatsoever?
Not that I was able to glean, Your Honor.
All right.
Speaking specifically, though, about whether this is a final appealable order, in the event that this court decides that this is not a final appealable order, I believe that that does deprive the juvenile of their right to appeal whether or not this should have been transferred at all. I think that, and is our contention that, in the event, here's why that is. When the juvenile court transfers this to county court, the juvenile case closes. The juvenile case is terminated and jurisdiction is terminated. At that point in time, a separate complaint is filed in the county court. Upon being filed in the county court, that is now a separate case. Pretend for, in this case, for example, it's a felony. That case could then be bound over to district court. Upon being found guilty, hypothetically, that individual would then appeal it to the appellate court and potentially up to this court. In order to have an assignment of error, being that, in fact, the juvenile should not have been transferred, they would not be able to include in the record of their criminal case any of the information required from the juvenile case.
Couldn't the attorney file a press pay for preparation of transcript and bill of exceptions in the juvenile court and in the trial court?
Well, it's my understanding,
is there something that prevents that?
It's my understanding at this point in time there is no mechanism with which that I could, in a criminal matter, include information in my record from a completely separate case. The juvenile case has a different case number. It is a JD case number. It is, in fact, a civil matter, as I know the court's aware. And so in filing or in preserving my record on appeal on the criminal matter and creating that transcript, including bill of exceptions from important hearings, things that the court would need to actually have that assignment of error preserved and discussed in the appeal on the criminal matter, there's no mechanism that I'm aware of with which I could include a record from a completely separate case, a juvenile case, a civil matter.
Well, you just asked the court to do it.
Well, at this point in time, Your Honor, I'm not aware of a mechanism that can be done.
Okay,
I've been
but
aware
assuming it could, wouldn't you have relief in the appeal from the criminal case that if it was, wouldn't you would have a remedy there that if the court found it should have remained in the juvenile court, then that conviction is probably going to be vacated and you've got your relief.
Well, my concern
and then if
about
there's time for you to go back to the juvenile court, fine. If there's not, then probably you're free.
Well, my concern about that, Your Honor, is that if we do wait for the pendency of the criminal matter, get all the way to the end of that, possibly get through the appeals, you have a very real problem with the juvenile. A child sitting in the juvenile detention center potentially for a year, longer than a year, being deprived at that point in time of these substantial, I'd argue, rights and statutorily granted rights to rehabilitative services through the juvenile court system they could have been afforded.
Don't you acknowledge that it's the same problem if you appeal immediately when there's not, or when the case is transferred?
Certainly there is this time period wherein there doesn't seem to really be any answer as to who has jurisdiction at that point. but allowing that issue to be addressed at the point in time in which the transfer order is issued allows that juvenile to hopefully or potentially get back to the juvenile courts if the decision is made that the order was done in error. It allows them to get back sooner. And so rather than have to go through the pendency of the entire criminal matter, possibly, as I said earlier, bound up to district court, then appealed up to multiple levels, if you're allowed to appeal it at that point in time, that juvenile, yes, does have to wait for a short period of time.
What right is being vindicated by the appeal?
In terms of when...
The order of transfer being appealed, what right is being vindicated?
I think the substantial right that they have at that point in time is to the juvenile services and the rehabilitative services that are being offered to them by the juvenile court. I think
can't you get those through the adult court? Can't you get the same services?
No, I don't believe you can, Your Honor. I think the juvenile court's mission, specifically laid out both in LB 464 as the legislative language of the new law that came out, and the general understanding of the juvenile court being a rehabilitative court, provides additional services that are not available to a juvenile.
The right is your right to be tried as a juvenile and not an adult, because the penalties imposed upon a juvenile are much different than the penalties imposed upon an adult. That's your right that you're arguing. It's not your right, other rights. It's the right to be treated as a juvenile and tried accordingly.
Well, I absolutely agree. I think that there is a right, given we've established a juvenile, to have juveniles treated as such. The Supreme Court has acknowledged, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, isn't our case law to the contrary?
That a juvenile has a right to be treated as a juvenile?
Yes.
Well, I believe that there is a right, if the petition is initially filed in juvenile, I believe that juvenile has a right to be treated as a juvenile until a point in time in which it is decided that it should be transferred.
And what's your best authority for that proposition, the right to be treated as a juvenile?
Well, I don't have authority to that at this point in time, Your Honor. I just mean I believe that if a juvenile is an actual juvenile, they should be treated as such in the court, given that that's where the petition was initially filed.
Accepting, for purposes of argument, your proposition that there's a right to have a case filed in juvenile court, is there a right... In the category of juvenile filings in this case, to have the case remain in juvenile court, to have it adjudicated in juvenile court. You focus on the filing as if it's all of it. Is there a right to have the case remain and be adjudicated in juvenile court?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe there is a right, and the substantial right that I believe I was talking about earlier is the substantial right.
Well, now
you've
given away your case, haven't you?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You've given away your case now, haven't you? If you argue that you don't have a right to have it not transferred, then they transfer it, what's the final appealable order if you didn't have a right to not have it transferred?
I'm sorry, perhaps I misspoke. I do believe you have a right to be treated as a juvenile in juvenile court at that point in time. So I do believe you do have a right in juvenile court to have adjudication in that court, have the case followed through in the juvenile court at that point. So, Your Honor, I suppose, getting at in terms of the jurisdictional issue, in addition to what's already been argued in terms of whether it's a final appealable order or not, I do believe that in the event this is found to not be a final appealable order, you prevent the juvenile from having the right to actually preserve in the record certain documents of exception, transcripts, things that would be required in order to address that issue upon appeal at the end of the criminal matter. Now, in addition to that, Your Honor, there are certain specific facts in this case. I'd like to get to the actual sufficiency of the evidence that I believe the court should find that the juvenile court did err in transferring this case to the adult court. In the order that was issued by the juvenile court, there are specific factors that are gone through by the judge in order to determine whether or not this should or should not be transferred. In looking at those factors, there's a number of factors that I believe the juvenile court did take into consideration and determine ultimately weighed in favor of transfer, that a look at the evidence shows actually would weigh in favor of keeping it in juvenile court. Specifically talking about, Your Honors, I believe specifically in that circumstance, the judge determined that certain factors weighed in favor of transferring, such as the type of treatment a juvenile would be amenable to, the consideration of public safety, and the consideration of the juvenile's ability to appreciate the nature and seriousness of their conduct. A de novo review of the record, looking at the evidence that was presented at that juvenile transfer hearing, I believe shows that all three of those factors cut the other way and, in fact, are in favor of keeping the juvenile in juvenile court.
why shouldn't the standard be for abuse of discretion?
Well, Your Honor, I think that, generally speaking, juvenile matters, when they're appealed, are reviewed de novo. Now, there are certain circumstances in which they are reviewed abuse of discretion. However, it was determined that the juvenile, In re JK 265 NEB 253 259, they specifically said the only cases in which a juvenile case is going to be reviewed on abuse of discretion is when the statute being reviewed gives broad discretion to that juvenile court. Now, the language in this particular transfer statute is specific enough. It uses language such as shall. The judge shall take into consideration, and then lays out approximately 14 to 15 factors they shall take into consideration. It's my opinion, my belief, that the reading of this statute does not allow enough discretion to the juvenile court, that this should be one of those incredibly unique circumstances where a juvenile order is in fact reviewed abuse of discretion rather than de novo, which is the general standard that is used for most, if not all, other juveniles.
Was there testimony, excuse me, was that right, from a probation officer that there was no treatment available or program that appeared suitable?
That was the testimony of Ms. Mindy Vogel, who was the probation officer that testified at that hearing. However, Ms. Vogel also testified that there are a number of services available in probation. I believe this is in the brief. She went through the multi-tiered services that are available to juveniles, starting with in-home probation, community-based intervention in-home probation, which is higher, all the way to out-of-home probation, psychiatric residential treatment facilities, and ultimately the Youth Rehabilitation Treatment Center in Kearney for boys. There's all of these services available. She also said that in her own experience, both as the intake supervising officer currently, as well as a supervising officer, she has seen herself and others supervise juveniles who are charged with felonies, theft offenses, and I would remind the court as well that the offenses the juvenile is looking at here are nonviolent. They are three of the six are attempt thefts. And so I do believe that she testified, and there is evidence in the record, that there are a number of services available to youth, juveniles who are convicted or found to be responsible of thefts and felonies, and she supervised individuals who are older than her. She's also testified in that record that there are youth who are supervised out of state. She has, in fact, supervised youth in California, where Sandrino resides. There's a certain mechanism with which the juvenile court can supervise individuals or juveniles in other states called the Interstate Compact Agreement under the Juvenile Code. Other states can supervise these juveniles in California, in other states across the country, under an order of probation here in Nebraska. So I believe there's ample evidence on the record, and a de novo review of that record would show that there's a number of services a juvenile would be amenable to. Her determination, and I apologize, I know I'm out of time, if I could just finish this thought. Her determination that Sandrino is not amenable to any treatment, there was no evidence as to how she actually came to that determination. And in fact, she testified to the fact that in making determinations as to what a juvenile could be amenable to or what a juvenile could be open to, they oftentimes go through in interview processes with both the juvenile and the parents. They look at evaluations. They look at a number of things before saying yes or no. We don't know what services are available to them. But in this circumstance, Ms. Vogel testified she wasn't able to interview Sandrino. There was a great language barrier. She wasn't able to interview Sandrino's mother because she did not speak English either. And yet somehow she was able to come to this determination that nothing at all would help this juvenile, knowing literally nothing about him or his circumstances outside of the cursory interaction she had. So I do believe there are ample resources that would be available to Sandrino, and a de novo review of the record would show that he could be amenable to those services. I see that I'm very much out of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Codigan, don't believe we have any time for you. So, Mr. Reed, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Christopher Reed, Deputy Lancaster County Attorney, on behalf of the state of Nebraska in this matter. This is a very unique and uncommon case for Lancaster County, what we've seen, given the sophistication of the financial crimes involved in this, as well as what appears from the evidence to be a concerted organized crime effort in this community, and the fact that There's evidence suggesting that both Sandrino and Ramos are here illegally in the country, and question of whether they reside, and question of their ages. Before getting to some of the specifics of why I think juvenile court was appropriate and did not err in transferring this to adult court, I do want to touch a few things on some of the jurisdictional arguments with this being there not being a final appealable order. Our position is that there is no substantial right affected. Juvenile court being a court of special proceedings, but the test for an appeal is whether there's a final appealable order. State v. Meese is a case of the transfer issues that specifically holds that there's not a constitutional right to juvenile court, and that court or that case goes on further to say that the loss of access to a juvenile court itself does not affect a substantial right. I think the fact that these juveniles were not are being transferred to adult court, were transferred to adult court, does not affect a substantial right. Certainly the legislature recently and some of their changes in juvenile reform and have given different ages when juvenile must stay in juvenile court, but at least the range of ages that we know these two youths are believed to be is in that discretion area where the state for this level of felony has to file in juvenile court, but the state is also allowed to file the transfer. And given the precedent in state meets, I don't believe it affects a substantial right. Regarding Mr. Duncan.
Counsel,
I'm sorry.
Counsel, you would agree with me, I think, that to be a substantial right for purposes of an appeal, it does not have to be a constitutional right. A substantive statutory right would also be sufficient, wouldn't it?
I would agree with that. I would contend, though, that the way the statute currently reads, with different ages and classifications of felonies or misdemeanors, certainly points to where a case should start, but does not give that individual a substantive right to remain in court for these particular individuals. I also do believe the record could be preserved. I believe in this case, once it was sent to the county court, the record of juvenile court was submitted to the county court, and it's pretty commonplace. So all the transcript of what happened in juvenile court is there in the county court. I believe that would also go to the district court once it was
found. Could you talk a little bit about that procedure so that we have an understanding of what you mean?
Sure. My understanding recollection specifically in this case is once Judge Ryder transferred this matter to the to county court, charges were filed, the same charges were filed in county court, but that record, I believe, was also given to county court where it would be part of county court record in terms of filing for new motions and what the court ruled on goes there.
Other words, the content, at least in a paper file world, the content of the paper file from the juvenile court would go to the county court automatically.
That's my understanding. That's what I believe occurred.
What about the content of the hearings that would have been taken by a reporter or recording device in the juvenile court? What happens to those upon the transfer?
I believe those would stay with the court reporter up until the time a party filed a press appeal to have that recording or that transcript actually prepared. In a bill of exceptions form, I don't see there's any reason why, if there's an appeal, someone could not file a motion to this court even to get leave to file that press appeal to have the court reporter prepare that so that it can also be part of any sort of bill of exceptions transcript. Seeing that the juvenile case, if it is transferred to county court and then even goes up to district court, that's still all the record of what's happened in this case. I still think there should be access to that.
What statute would provide for the preparation of the bill of exceptions under that circumstance?
That I could not say, just standing here off the top of my head. It wasn't really an area I was thinking of. I do think, though, that even if there's a statute that does not necessarily address a specific issue, I still think a motion could be filed with court.
Do the reporters have a duty to maintain their untranscribed material?
I believe they do. I don't know for the length of time. I believe it's several years. It's on the top of my head as I stand here today. There's also, I believe, was brought up the issue of services in adult court, certainly. Bail time would be that, but there could also be probation. That is certainly on the table for many offenders in adult court. And probation, adult probation, has many of the same services as juvenile court probation in terms of treatment, drug testing, supervision, any of those things in general. So I don't think that simply because someone is adult court means that they're losing out access to some of the very same services of the juvenile court. One thing I also want to touch on today that was brought up or was mentioned of the standard of review being de novo. However, I believe there's very well established case law and transfer hearings in general that suggests or hold that the standard of review specifically is abuse of discretion. Certainly cases in district court where there was a motion to transfer from adult court to juvenile court, when those have then gone up to be addressed on appeal, the standard review has been held to be abuse of discretion. The State v. Mint case, I believe it was referenced in my brief, clearly holds precedent for that standard of review being abuse of discretion. I don't see anything in how these statutes were changed over the past few years by the legislature that would indicate the legislature is now intending to try and enact a different standard of review. I don't see why juvenile court, who really has more, I think, specific knowledge and experience with dealing with juveniles, obviously, what specific services are available, as well as weighing the different factors in favor of transfer, why it should be different.
Well, there is a juvenile statute that expressly provides what the standard of review will be from an appeal from the juvenile court to a higher appellate court, and that's de novo on the record. If this is appealable from the separate juvenile court, why wouldn't that standard apply?
I don't think it should apply simply because the transfer issue in general has a clear lineage of a precedent that is an abuse of discretion standard. I think that should, in these specific circumstances, especially when the legislature did not choose to clarify at what point these should be transferred, if it's after transfer in a juvenile court or if it's after sentencing in adult court, if they are convicted of the offense. Since they didn't really address that and we're here trying to figure out what the best way to do this, I think the abuse of discretion should still apply. That's been precedent for some time now.
But all of those cases originated in the district court, right?
That's correct. With the specific factors here, Judge Ryder, in his order, went through every factor and stated whether he thought they weighed in favor of transfer or whether they weighed in favor of retaining jurisdiction in juvenile court. And one of the important ones is the juvenile's amenability to treatment in juvenile court. And sure, there's an argument that group homes or placement at the YRTC, being home with different mental health services, things of that nature, certainly weren't tried in this case. The fact is that the juvenile probation officer, Mindy Vogel, who was the supervisor with probation, did an exhaustive consideration of all the different treatment options in the juvenile court and testified that after considering those options, she did not believe the juvenile court is appropriate. I will note the difficulty of procedurally these transfer hearings have to be filed at the time that we file our petition in juvenile court. Must be heard within 15 days of when we file. Certainly doesn't give a lot of time for different things to happen. But Ms. Vogel was present at the entire hearing, heard the testimony of the various officers regarding the sophistication of this crime, all the different parts of these crimes that would have had to have been involved, and considered where the juveniles are from, consider that we were unable to determine what, if any, criminal history existed in their country of origin in Romania, but did consider that she doesn't believe that transfer, or she doesn't believe that juvenile court is an appropriate venue for these juveniles. So with that, I would ask the court to affirm the decision of the juvenile court transferring this to adult court. Thank you.
You seem to be suggesting that the state didn't have much time to get ready for the transfer hearing. Is that what you're saying? Because my question is, doesn't the state control when the petition is filed? I understand that the motion to transfer must be filed at the same time, but wasn't it within the state's control to decide when to file?
In some respects, yes. The issue here was that these juveniles were detained by law enforcement. That was an authorized by probation, which would require either letting them go and then not knowing where they would be or filing a petition at that moment in order to hold them while this was being investigated, and certainly to secure their appearance before the court, especially in cases like this.
The parties posed a flight risk, didn't they?
They did. They did, and that was a concern of, if we don't file now, they go, do we ever see these individuals again? So that had to be filed, and then we are under the 15-day clock.
You had, is that right, in one of the cases, you had an identification of one of the juveniles in Florida? Is that right?
Correct.
As to one of them?
Ramus was identified involved in the same behavior in Florida, and then San Torino was identified, I believe, in Miami Beach, Florida, in Tennessee, I believe, Nashville area, and then also in Oregon on surveillance footage doing the same.
And the person identified as mother was in California.
Correct.
Thank you.
Are any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next